And welcome back to As If with Lisa Favreau. For those of you who are watching this as a video, sorry for being a little bit shiny because I'm living a powderless life, not because I want to, but because I ran out of my favorite powder and I refuse to use something else. And until I actually get it, I'm gonna have to just pretend like I don't need powder. Anyway, first and foremost, I want to talk about a couple of things today that are kind of about kind of like an extension, a slight extension to my latest video that was kind of like a video essay. And that extension is in regards to being taken seriously in your field when you're in the arts and whatnot, and how because of your need to be taken seriously, you're oftentimes creating yourself into something that isn't really that interesting or very human in general. I wanted to talk about humor and comedy and things like that, and like how important they are to not only art but life in general, and how strange it is that we kind of how serious the arts can be even when they're trying to be funny. I kind of noticed in university there were a lot of people who were trying to be funny or to use humor in their art, and people who were trying to use humor in their works were doing it from a perspective of trying to comment on the fact that anything can be art, which seems to be like the lowest denominator of art. This is the type of art that a tech bro that is very insecure is going to make if he was, you know, forced to make art. He would go and like put, you know, he would recreate that artwork that went viral where someone put glasses on the floor and everyone was walking around it as if it was an artwork, when in reality it was just like a random person left their glasses there or whatever. And it was like a whole thing of like, oh my god, you guys, like, this is why we say that art is bullshit. You know, it's kind of like one of those things where, like, obviously there's a lot of things in terms of how art is perceived where people don't fucking know what they're in looking at, and that's fair. Like, I'm not saying that you actually need to even look at art if you don't want to, honestly. Like, who gives a fuck? But it's just like one of those things, you know, where I think we could all benefit if we leaned into humor a lot more when it comes to art. I feel like a lot of I think that honestly comedy and just humor in general is the closest thing to what life is or what reality is, you know, in a way of at least to me, a lot of absurd things, a lot of things that don't quite make sense and that are abstract are the ones that are really funny. Maybe that's why my humor is like a weird puppet twirling in the air to 2008 Timbaland, you know, track. Maybe that's why. But I just think that it's kind of a shame that the only times when we do have humor involved in the artists' lives is either from the past, like we start to appreciate it when it's in the past, or it is appreciated only by people who don't actually understand art, and it's artists that are making the lowest denominator art that doesn't actually contribute to the art scene in any type of way. We have a lot of those types of artists. Like, I think a lot of people talk about Banksy a lot, and I'm not saying that. It's just this artist is not particularly that interesting, and I think that it's really strange that so many people just don't get how little people in the actual arts give a fuck about that artist. But it's just really interesting how humor that's allocated for the fine arts is usually humor that makes fun of the art itself. You know, I want some variety. I don't want to look at the same fucking shit every single year as if people don't know that Duchamp exists. Like, Marcel Duchamp exists. Like, we have done this already and multiple times over. Like, maybe we should wrap it up and do something that is a little bit different. That's why I think that sometimes things that don't actually appear as really high art can be pushing things in culture a lot farther than things that are technically very intellectual and academic, but they don't say much with it. The amount of times I would be sitting there in class, like, or some kind of fucking seminar or some shit, and talking to a bunch of artists or just listening to them, you know, and realizing that the conversation is not really actually going anywhere. It seems like it is going somewhere. Technically, they're saying a bunch of words, and I understand every single word. I even understand every single sentence. But when you put it all together, it's like they're saying a bunch of nothing. It's kind of like that meme, and I've said it multiple times, you know, like the one where that guy was, it was like a TikTok of a guy saying, this willful ignorance, you know. It's strange because I think that we're actually going to talk about it with my assistant in the future, because we made a list and we continuously update whenever we remember a new word that kind of fits that list. But we created a list of all the words that are kind of like buzzwords in art circles, things that people just say and cling on to way too much. And the funniest thing about those words is that they're kind of like clothes, kind of like fast fashion, in the sense of it being popular for a time being and everybody using it, and then all of a sudden it completely disappears, which is really interesting because it seems like if that would actually be a very useful term that would actually describe something, don't you think it would fucking stick around? Right? Like, if you already came up with it, why the fuck would you not use it anymore? And I think that there are so many words in the arts that are popular for just like a moment, and they're overused to a ridiculous degree. And most of all, you know, you can know that something has run its course and is overblown and is usually very vacuous when Grimes starts to use it, that word, you know, in her music. That's when you know the term has died. That's when you know that the term has arrived at a point where it is kind of like a commodity between intellectuals, or not intellectuals, but academics. Before we dive into today's topic, I just wanted to say that the song of the week is Diamond by Solgi and Irene. And you guys are welcome. Honestly, I'm obsessed with that song. And I mean, I've heard it before. I obviously heard it when the album came out, and that was a while ago. But I remember about it every once in a while, and it hits every time. I'm just telling you, this is such a good song. Whenever a song just makes you feel like there's such a addicting rhythm to it that makes you feel like the air is moving in a particular way, that's when you know the song is really doing the thing that it's supposed to do, okay? Today's topic is kind of tangential to this whole thing of humor and whatnot, and highbrow, lowbrow art, and it is Pauline Boddy. You know, I'm sure that a lot of you are familiar with pop art, especially American pop art, mostly because it was popularized, you know, quite a bit, and especially due to Andy Warhol and how famous he is. But there is this artist, Pauline Boddy, who was kind of overlooked, mostly after her death. And the only one who was credited as one of the pioneers of British pop art. The thing is, girly looks kind of like Brigitte Bardot, you know? Except I think that she's just like a better person. She was one of the people who were genuinely like the avant-garde artists. And the thing is, she was just called an it girl by a lot of people. She was dismissed a lot, mostly because she made some money acting, just like acting roles in movies or whatever, right? And obviously it was a lot more lucrative for her, even though she did want to do painting. And also, like, her father was against her going into the arts, into a school even, to study it. But what else is new, right? Like, every time we talk about any artist who was a woman, whichever race, whichever nationality, whichever background, there's always this bullshit of like, oh, no one wanted her to even get an education. Everyone was always putting fucking sticks in... Is that a saying in English? Putting sticks in wheels? Is that a saying in English? Girl, I don't know. But you kind of get the point of the saying anyway, even if it is not a thing in English. Because also she hung out with a lot of celebrities, rock stars and such, mostly because she was an artist that defied a lot of expectations and a lot of and kind of just did her own thing. So obviously she was in the same circles as a lot of people who were also in the counterculture. Of course, it's also due to her being, you know, an actress, but I think that overall she's one of those artists that were a really good artist. It's kind of crazy how all of this art can be in the same gallery. Back then, like, she would have her work alongside a lot of other artists, and it's crazy that she would be overlooked specifically because of gender. Like, honestly, I mean, it's not that crazy. It's all old and annoying. But let's just talk about one of her most famous works first, which is The Only Blonde in the World. And of course, in, you know, the pop arts tradition, she painted a lot of celebrities or you know, people who have been changed into an iconic image. Her work in particular had quite a bit of a difference with people like Andy Warhol, even though they even focused on the same figures sometimes. For example, in this particular work, The Only Blonde in the World, it's obviously about Marilyn Monroe, as most works that would be talking about a blonde in the 60s would be about, or 50s for Bodhi in particular. Marilyn wasn't just an image that she was interested in the way that she was for Andy Warhol. Pauline's work oftentimes was about sexuality and obviously a lot of, you know, sexual liberation stuff that was going on, and, you know, a topic of conversation at that point in the arts. It's been said that Bodhi was quite interested in Marilyn in a sense of how she was also treated in a similar way, but Pauline oftentimes resisted being an actress while Marilyn embraced it, or at least she completely, you know, stepped into the actress role or actress profession, I guess. I think that what interested her most is this dichotomy. Dichotomy is one of the words on the list, by the way. It's this dichotomy between Marilyn as someone who kind of represents a more open female sexuality, while at the same time, like, suffering from the, you know, limitations of being made into a sex symbol, because it clearly is just a symbol, just like an object, right? So there's a lot of objectification that comes with it, even though the act itself of being a bombshell or of looking a certain way or trying to embrace your sexuality comes from the need to have control over your own body and your own life. And this is a very strange relationship that oftentimes women feel to their body, where if they try to take control over the narrative and they are sexual and they want to be sexual, oftentimes they are, you know, put into confines of sexuality and objectification. So even though it's technically an active role and you're actively trying to just be, you know, confident, be comfortable with your own desires, you are still oftentimes put into an uncomfortable situation where you feel like an object, right? This relationship of beauty to life was important for both Pauline and for Marilyn, because the thing is, with Pauline, she oftentimes was talked about in a way that was tangential to actresses, and at the time, people were not really saying a lot of good things about actresses. It was still kind of considered to be a role that, or a career that is kind of frivolous or for people who are not that smart, you know? There was literally a quote from Scene magazine, okay, and that was in 1962, which was literally at the peak, or at least like in the middle, you know, what kind of Pauline's career as a professional artist. And they said, actresses often have tiny brains, painters often have large beards, Okay. Imagine a brainy actress who is also a painter and a blonde, and you have Pauline Bodhi. Technically, this is a quote that should be seen as like a compliment, I guess, right? But at the same time, it's a double-edged sword, because how do you both understand and see Pauline's brains, you know, and like appreciate what she brings to the table, while at the same time going like against everything that she basically stands for, where she's saying that every woman given the chance, if she wouldn't be fucking constantly taken down by her, you know, partners, her parents, everybody, and like constantly put under a lock and key at home, they would all thrive as much as anybody else. And hearing that, they decided to say, isn't that crazy that actresses are so dumb and painters are always men and old? Now imagine an actress who actually has a brain, who's also a painter, and who's also blonde. Oh my god, blonde. That's so dumb. Honestly, sometimes I just sit and I think about how stupid everything is, and it's just mind-boggling. And yeah, because how did we end up here? Genuinely, how do we end up here where people have such stupid ass opinions? Because it would make, you know, like sometimes you're talking about things more in depth and there's differences of opinions or whatever on like little things that at least make sense in terms of like people seeing life differently and having different approaches to it, and therefore having maybe some differences in, you know, very intricate issues. But when it comes to things like hair color and thinking that it means anything is idiotic. It genuinely is, and we all know it. How did it survive so long? How was it a thing for that long? And I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if it's still a thing in many places. I just don't know about it because I have created a bubble around me of people who are not goddamn idiots, so I don't have to deal with it. But it is still mind-boggling that we have, that it was even a discussion, girl. That's embarrassing. Anyway, even here, where she's basically being complimented, she's technically also made into this one singular exclusive novelty, like one time kind of thing, and specifically theme, because she is oftentimes not even beautified, but I guess talked about in a way that only focuses on the way that she looks to compare to the stereotype or whatever, right? Instead of talking about her work. It's so hard to find anybody speaking about her work specifically instead of talking about what she looked like. It's crazy. The thing is, if you've seen a lot of British pop art, you remember that there was a lot of pinup women in paintings and in pop art world in general, because it was overpopulated by men as fucking everything is. It was quite different to see someone who is not only a woman, but a woman that it would usually be painted on those paintings, creating art and leading the way. I think that I should probably cover a little bit more of her life, because right now I want to talk about how her paintings were basically locked away for years. I think after her death, they were not really seen by many people for maybe 30 years, and they were just locked away in, I think, some kind of barn or some shit. Wait, let me see. I forget. Her literal rediscovery of much of her work in an old barn. It is insane that her works have been basically locked away after her death. And the thing is, Pauline died young, the age of 28, I believe. It was cancer, and it was because she went to prenatal, like, ultrasound or some shit, and a tumor was found and it was malignant, and she would have had to do chemo and radiation, I believe. I can't really find the specifics about this this type of cancer, but I believe that she did have a chance of survival, but she decided to opt out of treatment because she wanted to have her baby. And the worst part is that the baby, the girl who was born, she married this guy whose name is Clive Goodwin. I don't fucking know how to pronounce that name. Clive, let me know. And apparently he was a left-wing guy, which is, you know, great, but also at the same time, there's something that really bothered me about the fact that all of her paintings were locked away in a barn after her death, when her husband, a left-wing man, allegedly, lived for another 12 years or so after her, also died, I don't know, maybe he was a lot older than her, who the fuck knows, but he died 12 years after. And I just have, like, I don't know, it just really bothered me, the thought of the fact that she died and a man who claimed to love her, instead of keeping her legacy alive, this thing that was really important to her, which was painting and her artistic practice that she's been participating in and you know, practicing for years, something that she was clearly very good at. She was one of the avant-garde artists of British pop art, and he decided to lock them away. I mean, maybe it was someone else who decided to do that, but he didn't do shit about it either. This part is the speculation part, because the fuck happened there? Like, this is why I'm like sitting sometimes thinking about what the fuck is the point of even having a partner when they do less for us than our friends do? Like, you claim to love her. She's done such great work that was actually very poignant and very good for, especially the fact that she was so fucking young and she was doing such good work. It's crazy. And the fact that he did not do shit with it. It was lost for 30 years. All of her artworks were lost for 30 years. He was alive for at least 12 afterwards, after she died. And for those 12 years, he didn't do shit with those artworks. What happened? Doesn't it bother you? I have no fucking, like, there's not enough information about this, because he hasn't, like, information about him is really hard to find, especially when it comes to this, like, you know, relationship between them two. And I think that maybe the woman who had done a lot of research into Pauline's life, her name is Sue Tate, maybe she knows something about that. If you guys have heard a lot of her talks or something like that, and you heard something about it, let me know. But it's just always going to bother me the way that this is kind of this is how it usually ends, doesn't it? Like, such an exceptional person. There are so many subpar men who their partners who loved them would try and, you know, preserve their legacy and things that they have achieved, even if those things were not even that impressive. And then you look at this and you're like, wow, all of her works in some barn? You didn't even like get like a studio or anything like that to keep it there for even for you and for your daughter to have her mother's work in a studio to see, to study? What the fuck is that? What? And the fact that her cancer wasn't terminal when she was pregnant, and I don't know how, I think that they said that she could have terminated her pregnancy and like done chemo and whatever. It's her choice that she didn't, whatever, but the fact that he didn't even fucking preserve her work afterwards, like, do you know what I mean? Like, how can all of those people claim to love people so much, to marry them, to waste their time, to have children with them, and then like treat them like this? Like, they can go fuck themselves, actually. Anyway, so one other work that was her last work was a commission, and it was called Bum, and it was in 1966. And when she painted it, she was already super ill. Like, it was already, she obviously had a very difficult birth, and she was already terminally ill after it, obviously, because the cancer is not going to wait. You know, it's going to progress whenever it fucking wants to, which is, you know, always great to try and comprehend as a patient, but that's a whole other conversation. She created this painting that was for an avant-garde erotic theater and cabaret, and once again, this work is quite humorous. It is for a show that is literally called, referencing the French pronunciation, meaning, oh, what an arse you have. It's very, very, very bright work fitting for a very campy, erotic type of show. It's interesting that she managed to even paint something as humorous and as fun and bright and colorful at a time when she was terminal. That's one of the reasons why I think that humor is so important. And I'm really fucking tired of everyone constantly walking on eggshells and trying to pretend something to be smarter or better than they are, when in reality, like, anyone who's got even half a brain and knows, actually internalizes and understands their mortality wouldn't be such a little bitch about everything. Like, they wouldn't be walking around wearing only a specific type of, like, Chanel suit every fucking other day of the week to preserve some kind of image or whatever. Like, it's one thing to do things for fun and, like, experimenting with fashion and having a fashion sense because you're having fun with it. And another thing is when you're just, like, just can't stop thinking about yourself as an image, as something that is perceived, and constantly, instead of trying to make it, at least trying to make this image to be as life reflecting as possible, you're trying to create something that is so soulless and useless, genuinely. Like, that's just so much energy wasted on absolute nonsense. Ali Smith commented on this particular artwork saying, "What a way to go, though, on this blatantly comic gesture. Vital, thoughtful, challenging, sensuous, beautiful, bright, and ribald." The most interesting part about her work is that it definitely does have a lot of a difference from a lot of other pop artists who have been doing a lot of... they would just, like, you know, sometimes take an image that's considered to be a lowbrow art, elevated to highbrow in a sense of, you know, putting it in a gallery or repainting it or doing it in some kind of old school traditional artistic practice way, and that would be the point of the artwork, which is like, okay, well, if we've done it once, that's enough. I think, like, that's not interesting enough to be discovering over and over again. But this is actually specifically something that an art historian commented on. That art historian is David Meller, and he said she did something that other people weren't doing. The final vindication is the work, essentially montage work, assembly of images, and not in a reified way. 90% of pop is deadpan and dehumanized drudge stuff. She didn't do that. There's some information, like, for example, following decades as a kitsch and frivolous party girl tangential to the main British pop art movement, but that's like how she was passed off as, not actually what she was. Many of her works were lost after the early death of her husband in the 1970s and her name largely forgotten. Once again, he died 12 years later. I don't think that, at least 10 years, I don't know exactly the date, I don't remember, but I think I calculated it to be 12, but who knows. In any case, he had time to do something with it, you know, at least get a proper spot for it instead of a goddamn barn. But there were a few who maintained her significance, however, including a few dedicated academics who were caught under the spell of Bodhi and determined to not let her legacy slip away. David Allen Meller has been transfixed by the figure of Bodhi as a young teen. In the late 1980s, he began an extensive search for her work, contacting family members on a treasure hunt, which led him to a barn in Kent where many of the paintings were found. He recalls it as an intensely emotional experience, and he went on to exhibit them in 1993 show at the Barbican Art in 60s London. This was attended by the young academic Sue Tate, who was equally enthralled by the work, and in the years since, both Meller and Tate have been instrumental in locating more paintings and bringing Bodhi's work back into critical focus. It's just a little strange once again. I mean, people are saying that, you know, after his death her work was lost, whatever. I don't know, I'm a little stuck on the fact that her works were lost like this. That's what I wanted to talk about when it comes to this artist, Pauline Bodhi. Anyway, I hope this is not gonna be a super short episode. I never know how short they're gonna be when I finish filming, because I don't know, sometimes I like stop talking to think and I don't know how long it takes me until I start editing and cutting out parts. I hope that it's still going to be a half hour tight episode. Let me know what you want to talk about. If you want me to talk about anything in particular, I have some things planned already, but, you know, just for the future so I can keep in mind that you guys are interested in something in particular. Anyway, thanks for watching. I will see you next week. And I'll see you with a bisistent video on my main channel soon too. Bye.